There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your host, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest, Austin McCurdy. How are you doing, Austin?
Good, Joni. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on Inside the Wolf's Den today. And so just a little bio on Austin. So Austin is the COO of Sharper Business Solutions. After graduating from college, Austin went into education where he served as a teacher and principal for 6 years. In 2005, he purchased his first Papa John's pizza store and eventually grew to 8 locations in 3 states. After winning multiple sales and operation awards, Austin sold his store in stores in 2017 and joined the Sharper team to help other businesses reach their business goals. Having managed a staff of over 200 employees, Austin's understanding of hiring the right personnel and placing them in the right roles is an invaluable asset to our clients. And Sean and I know this firsthand. I mean, we have struggled and failed through the hiring process, right, throughout mm-hmm. the years. And so having tools like the Predictive Index, which we're going to be going through a lot of this today, really helped us on the hiring process and finding that, you know, the right people for the right seats, right?
Yeah, it's a valuable tool that is a big part of, I think, our hiring process and even the remote team members with Truework Logistics. We use it just as much in that, finding the right people, the right roles. And so I think it's if you're not doing it, I don't know how you're finding the right people and putting them in the right place.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, we look at them, have them come in for an interview. You're like, oh, like that sounds like a right person. Then you get them and they're like, man, why didn't that person work out? Well, now we know. So Austin, again, thanks for being with us today. I would like for you to give maybe a little background on yourself. Explain to our listeners what the Predictive Index is and how it's such a powerful tool.
Cool. I tell you, I gave my opening like, thanks for having me on. I thought, well, I'm not like on Fox News or something here. I feel like I can't believe it.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you're special. You're on prime time. So.
Yeah.
I had no idea you were a teacher and a principal. I knew the Papa John's, but yeah.
Yeah, to go back a little ways. Yeah, I graduated college with a degree in education.
Is that where you lost your hair? Was it with the kids?
Yeah. No, you would deal with teenagers all day, every day. So your kids aren't teenagers yet, are they?
No. 11 and 7. So we got a ways.
You'll get there. Yeah. It's coming out, Sean.
I'm getting the gray. I got a ton of gray.
Yeah. So. I taught high school primarily math, which nobody likes. But taught high school math for about 6 years and was a principal the last couple of years as well. And then got the bright idea during college. I had delivered and then had been general manager of a Papa John's restaurant and got the bright idea to go into the franchise world of it. More was just an opportunity that came available and jumped into it and was able to have success there and grow that into eight restaurants, like Joni said there already, with a lot of employees. And it's funny, at the time, I think I calculated one day that I had over 6,000 people come through.
Wow.
So we were hiring and firing, like firing became like a common occurrence. I was always firing somebody. So it just happens in the industry with that many employees coming and going. But it's funny looking back on it, and that was obviously the biggest struggle in my business. It wasn't like making a pizza. It really wasn't getting sales. It was employees.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hiring the right people.
And it's always that guess. And I had employees that made $2.13 an hour, and I had employees that made 6 figures a year. So I ran the gamut and everywhere in between. It wasn't, you know, when you're a multi-unit franchisee, you're not just dealing with minimum wage employees. You've got supervisors and marketing directors and finance people. So you're dealing with all levels of it. And that's what it became at 200 employees, was just dealing with the employee issues all the time. And when I sold those and came to work for Sharper, I really didn't come to work in the HR employee type space, but just working with our clients, that's an issue everywhere, right? Everybody is struggles in one way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. There was a study done by Predictive Index. They interviewed 500 CEOs and asked them what their biggest challenges were. And the number one challenge that came back was finding and identifying the right talent. Mm-hmm. It's not just it's something that all of us deal with all the time.
Right.
Especially in the current market that we're in, finding that talent is really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. But I think equally as difficult, and Joni alluded to it, is identifying that talent when it walks in the door. Mm-hmm. Most of us are, and I did it for years. What do? We grab a resume and we say, okay, has this person done the job before? Right? That's what we're looking for, their experience. And what studies have shown is that just because they did the job before doesn't mean they're actually good at it. To go, and you guys have been in business a long time, and you have several, quite a few employees as well. But I'd have an employee come in and they'd say, oh, I used to work at Domino's. And I'd say, cool, I'm going to hire them because they worked at a pizza shop before. And then I quickly realized why they no longer worked at Domino's. Right? it was a really bad predictor of the job place performance. In fact, it's only about a 12% predictor. It's much lower than we think it is. Mm. But what happens is, I was reading an article not long ago about the best and the worst predictors of job place performance. And some of the worst ones are hiring somebody because we like them, hiring somebody because they remind us of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. How many times have we done that? Oh, that guy reminds me of myself when I was that age. and then the last one is trick questions and made up scenarios. And yet I find employers and our clients do that all the time. They hired somebody because, well, I just had a connection with them, right? They reminded me of myself, where they made up scenarios. And we ignore the things that are the best predictors of job place performance. Number one, I want to talk a little about this today too, if we can get into it. You guys use this, is the cognitive score. Their cognitive ability is the number one predictor of job place performance. In fact, it's 42% of it. So a resume is 12, cognitive is 42. And the number two, this was interesting to me, is the number two best predictor is, do they have a growth mindset? Mm. And then number three is, are they a behavioral match for the job? Is the third best predictor. So we often ignore those things and instead go off our intuition that we think we're just a good judge of character. And right, I've done it. Right. I just know this guy's going to work out. Yeah. And then he stole a bunch of money from me, and I realized I wasn't too good at it. So.
Was it in your story? I'm just curious. This has nothing to do with hiring how was that exiting? How did you come to that decision? And did you feel like you lost a sense, like a not a sense of purpose, but like almost a sense of a portion of who you were? I don't know if it was that ingrained in you. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, did it?
It's funny. I told my daughter the other day, and at Sharper, we have, I think currently we're at 8 companies that I manage, 8 integrators. I know we're looking at 2 more that we're looking to actually buy. Yeah. And then Gary just texted me last night that there's a third one he's interested in now. I got a text at 11 o'clock last night that he's looking at the 11 of them. So I've not had a conversation with him yet about that. So if we can edit that out of this section, that would be good. I'm just joking. But I told my daughter the other day, I was thinking about going and delivering pizza again, just because I like it. I did it for so long. I'm like, I think I'm just going to go on Friday nights and go deliver. And then I'm like, I don't have time for that. Like, there's not time for that. But I enjoyed doing it. So yeah, I did it for so long that it was a big decision. Really, for me, it came down to I had the opportunity to exit.
Okay.
And I think in business in general, it is somewhat hard to exit, find a buyer who is interested in your business. Mm-hmm. And in the franchise community, it's even harder because they have to be approved by corporate.
Correct.
Right? It's got to be somebody who specifically wants that type of business. So I was approached to sell them. Okay. So when I sold them, they approached me. I have stores at the University of Michigan. And a guy approached me and said, I'd really like to buy him. I said, well, you can't afford them. He's like, well, how much? And I didn't realize that he could afford them. And so I just gave him an off the wall number and he took it. Wow. In fact, they thought I sold him all 8 of them. And I only sold him 3. And then about a year later, I called corporate and I'm like, you know, I'm kind of enjoying the slower pace of going from 8 down to 5. You know, if somebody's interested, I might entertain an offer. And they were sold 2 days later. Like wow. 2 days later, I had a bidding war. And it just made sense at that point to slow down. My kids were, 12 at the time, to 12, 8, 7, and 4.
Wow.
And it was like an opportunity for me to kind of slow down and spend these years here with them. And with Sharper, I still get to do that because I own part of the company and I make my own schedule and things like that. So it allows me to really kind of be with them right now in the years where they still want to be with me, because I know that it's coming, that they're not going to want to hang out with me anymore. My daughter's already kind of getting there. She's 15, you know, where it's like, well, I guess, Dad, if I have to go with you, I will, kind of thing. Yeah. So, but my 7-year-old still likes being with me. She still thinks I'm cool. So,
well, it's good. It's a good story. And I thank you for sharing that. And I think that's awesome that you were able to do that at that point in your life, you know, and be there more. So that's awesome. I'm sure that will carry forward into, you know, into their adult years, and looking back, you know, it's probably a great decision.
But.
We spent 31 days at Disney World that year.
Wow.
That
could lose some hair too, I think, right there.
See my rug. Oh, you can't see it. Sorry, my rug's like hidden Mickeys in it and stuff like that.
Cool. Wow. Yeah, that's spending some time at those parks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
yeah, we went.
Your whole winnings from all your your proceeds earnings, or whatever from your sales all went to Disney.
we took my oldest to Disneyland in Paris that year, and took her to France and Monaco and Italy, and I went to the Philippines and Vietnam, and so we did a lot of stuff that year, kind of just kicking back for a little while. So
that's cool. Well, can you get into a little bit, going back into the predictive index, can you explain to all our listeners? I'm sure there's a ton of people that listen to this that have no clue what we're talking about. So can you explain what it is, what the tool is, and how powerful it is?
I probably should check. Can I share my screen? Is that working, this type of thing, or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you, you have to make him the host though, right? Good question.
If it doesn't, that's okay. I just might be a little bit easier.
Never done that before, so this is a first.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm gonna hit share. We'll see what happens.
Well, there we have it on there.
Cool.
Look at there.
Awesome.
Is that working?
Why
okay?
do people behave the way they do?
Yeah, I think Sean, kind of get into that question. A lot of people misunderstand. Which is why I wanted to show this, what PI exactly is. I know you and Joni do, because we spent 2 days talking about
it. Right.
Mm-hmm. But they have a little bit of a misconception as to what the tool does and what it is exactly.
Mm-hmm.
First off, PI does not tell us, or behavioral assessments don't tell us, whether somebody can or can't do the job. That's not what it does.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe anybody can do anything they want to do. Right. So it's not measuring knowledge, their skills, their experience in the workplace. What it's measuring, why are they doing the job?
Mm-hmm.
Is this really, are they doing it because they enjoy the work, or are they doing it for another reason? Okay. That's what we're measuring. So to kind of kick that off, to understand the tool here, we have to understand a little bit about human behavior. So first thing is that people actually have drives. Okay. They don't have behavior. They have drives.
Okay.
Drives create needs, mm-hmm. and behavior is a response to a need. Now, what we see is people's behavior, right? We don't get to see what's actually driving that behavior behind
it.
We see the behavior. And then what a lot of us do is we see the behavior, and we then guess at what's causing that behavior, right? What drives them and what they need. And then because we're guessing at that point, we start managing them a certain way. We maybe hired them because we got in an interview and we're kind of trying to watch their facial expression, how they got about the job we're talking about. And they may not be excited about the job. They may be excited about the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Maybe it's a sales position and it pays more money than they've ever made before. Right. And what PI does is it measures what drives people. And then we're able to predict, if we measure what drives them, we can predict what they need and what their behavior is going to be. So to give a pretty simple example to it, if you knew that, if I told you, hey guys, I'm thirsty, right? That's my drive. You then could say, well, Austin probably needs a drink of water. And his behavior is he's going to go get some water, right? So kind of basic thing there is if we know what drives somebody, we can predict those needs and that behavior. Mm-hmm. And then my other example, to go back one, whoops, too far, is this, is you see behavior, you're guessing at what drives them and what they need. So for example, now, if I didn't tell you I was thirsty, I just got up from my chair, walked over to my refrigerator, grabbed a can of Coke and came back with it, right? That's the behavior you saw. Now you have to guess at what drove it and what did I need. So you might say, well, maybe he was thirsty. Maybe it's 2:30 on a Friday afternoon and he wanted the caffeine, mm-hmm. or he wanted the sugar for a pick me up. Maybe he's, I joke around with people that I'm a Coke addict, right? I'm addicted to Coca-Cola. I'm just used to having one in my hand, right? I like the flavor of it, on and on. Maybe I'm out of water and all I have is Coke. You can go on and on with the reasons why. But the point is that you'd be guessing at why I went and got it. Mm-hmm. So what we do with PI is we measure what drives them and we're able to predict their behavior. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for people to understand what the tool is and what it does. Because when somebody, right, we all heard it before, we've probably all used it. If you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're looking at, is if we can match the person up to what kind of behavior the job requires, the job now becomes a motivator. Right? Mm-hmm. They're emotionally connected because they get up in the morning and they say, I love my job. I love what I do. As opposed to, I like working for the company and I like my boss and I like the paycheck.
Right.
Because guess what? The company may change, the boss may change, and the paycheck may change. Uh-huh. Right. But the work itself doesn't. I tell people this, I hate mowing my grass. Like, I despise it. I blame it on my dad. We had 5 acres and my dad got us a push lawnmower for my brother and I to mow the grass with, and my 5 acres of push lawnmower, and I hate mowing grass. Yeah, no, just not that I'm bitter, but I have a brother who's 25, a lot younger than me. Uh-huh. My dad moved, got a house in the neighborhood, and bought my younger brother a riding lawnmower. And my other brother and I were like, really, Dad, what's this all about? Like, but because of that, if you come to my house, you'll see that I pulled all the landscaping out of the front of my house. There's no bushes. I took all the trees out. I have no flowers. I have no nothing. Now, before you criticize me for like killing the trees, they were like dying. They had to come out, but I wasn't real upset about it. My neighbor actually mows my grass for me. One day he comes over and he's like, hey, I'll just go ahead and mow your yard for you if it's okay. I'm like, go for it, Mike. It's all you, buddy. He mows my whole yard for me. All I have to do is weed eat, and I still don't do that. Right. I know that my grass can get 13 inches tall before the city will write me a citation. Because I don't
Austin doesn't like doing that.
Don't like doing it.
That's not his skill set.
Across the street from me, across the street, the guy retired about 10 years ago. I'm pretty sure he retired to mow his grass because he mows it every other day. I actually went and counted one day. He has 27 bushes or trees in his front yard. Wow. And I live in a neighborhood. It's like a half acre lot. But it looks like a park. I mean, he would never think of anybody touching his yard, let alone paying somebody to do it, right? Because he loves doing it. He's out there all the time. So you have one guy that loves doing it, one guy that doesn't. And when you come down my street, his yard looks amazing, right? And mine looks terrible because it's work to me. I'll pay somebody to do it. Him, he enjoys doing it. And that's what we're looking at with behavioral assessments, is we're looking at saying, is this person going, and we're predicting, is this person going to be able, is going to enjoy this job or not?
Right.
Because if they enjoy the job, we're going to see about a 34% better performance out of them than if they don't like doing the job. Mm-hmm. I used that on my daughter the other day, by the way. She doesn't like doing math. And I told her, I'm like, you understand you're going to have a 34% lower grade because you don't like doing this. You need to figure out how to enjoy math. Right. So that's what we found through all of this. And that's kind of the power of predictive index. Now, I feel like I'd be a little remiss if I didn't talk about cognitive, because it's the number one. And kind of people understanding what cognitive is. It's not intelligence. It's not how smart somebody is. If you think about IQ being the size of the sponge, cognitive is how fast does it absorb. So we kind of mentioned in my bio that I used to teach high school. Mm-hmm. So high school math. So I give out a math test. One kid would finish in 20 minutes. One kid would finish in 45. They both would score 100%. They both could solve all the problems correctly. One kid could do it faster than the other. So they both were going to get an A in their report card. I'd say they both were equally as smart, but one kid had a higher cognitive score. He could solve all the problems quicker than the other kid could. Mm-hmm. And that's what cognitive is. Just so happens that somebody's cognitive ability is the best predictor of long-term job performance. Mm-hmm. in the job placement.
Right.
And again, keep in mind, not every job requires a high cognitive score.
Mm-hmm.
Some jobs don't. And there is no correlation between a high or a low cognitive score if the job doesn't require it.
Can you give us some examples? Like what job role would require a high cognitive score?
Sure. So we'll talk about, like, in real estate, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's doing cold calling, right? I'm not asking them to solve complex problems. It's read a script, get some information, hand it off to somebody else, right? Now, I move up the line to the salesperson, the person buying the house. Well, then maybe there's some title issues, right? There's negotiations that have got to go on. There's scope of works that have to be looked at the house, mm-hmm. right? There's more complex problems that have to be solved, and they have to be solved very quickly, right? Like, I'm on a 1-hour appointment, I have to solve these problems,
mm-hmm.
okay? The COO of a company, right? Fairly high cognitive score. They're constantly all day long solving usually new problems that are coming along.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's what we'd be looking at, of a higher or lower cognitive score.
Can it change over time? Have you ever seen somebody's cognitive score get better or worse?
Cognitive scores are stable over time. There's been about 100 years of research on cognitive, and it's stable over time. It doesn't really change from there. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you this. If somebody has experience, it can be a substitution for cognitive, because what is experience? Experience is, I've already solved the problem before, and now I'm just applying the solution I already know to the same problem,
mm-hmm.
right? And so if somebody has a lot of experience, cognitive is going to become less important because they've already solved the problem before. They're just applying it. When somebody doesn't have experience, that's where it comes into play, a little more important. They're just going to pick things up quicker. I like to say, instead of 6 months of handholding, maybe only 3 months of guiding them along, because they're going to pick it up a little quicker.
Mm. Yeah.
I got a personal question. I'm gonna switch gears, and I don't know. I hope the listeners stay with us here on this. But the predictive index, I think I love that how you broke it down, and I understand that really, really well, what you just went through. I think we sometimes in our business struggle at times is making sure we're assessing them and for the right role. Right? Because that's the next step. Because now you understand what the predictive index mm-hmm. does, right? And you understand how powerful the tool it is, and what you're measuring, and then what you're getting, and get what you're trying to accomplish in the end. How do we make sure that we are, measuring? Their measurements or their results or their score matches the job we're looking for, I guess. Does that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a great question. And you know what? And I just said it, and I always hate it when people say that. Like, you know, they'll say, that's a great question. Like, would you tell me if it was a bad question? That's a bad question. So, anyway.
I mean, I hope you would tell me if it was a bad question. Well, in school, you were taught, right, that there's never a bad question or no, there's never a stupid question.
I told my students, I always tell them, like, there's no dumb questions.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, there's no dumb questions, but there are dumb people. Stop being a dumb person.
Well, I know, like, for us, I mean, you guys helped us create kind of our, you know, job descriptions. And so, like, in the property management world, we have maintenance, leasing, customer service in all the different departments. And you guys helped us design it, what, you know, would best fit those departments.
Yeah. And that's where, Sean, I guess it was a good question, and it's a complicated question at the same time. And it's one that comes up all the time. I'm always talking about it, is height. How are we building a job target to know what we're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy when you have somebody in the role already that's really, really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can say, you know what? I just want to hire another one of them, right? We've all had that employee. We're like, man, if I can get five of them. Well, the cool thing about PI is that we can hire five more of them. Maybe not from a core values culture standpoint, but from a behavioral standpoint, we can hire five more if we know who that is. Now, the challenge comes when you don't have that person that you're like, I need this role filled, and I don't know what it looks like from there. So in PI, in the software, there's a tool there that you can use to build it out. And what we're looking at is people who are familiar with the job and having them give us feedback on what kind of behavior that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
We also have to look at who's going to be managing this person and what kind of people do they manage well. So, for example, I'm a very collaborative kind of person. In PI speak, I'm a low A, low dominance. Okay. I don't manage high dominance people well. So in other words, I don't manage salespeople well. They aggravate me. They irritate me. They do everything just irritating. So I don't manage them well. I manage well people who are more collaborative and who are more following of the rules, right? They like structure and guidelines, things like that. So when I go to hire somebody that's going to be a direct report to me, I'm really looking for people that I enjoy managing because I'm going to manage them better. Uh-huh. Now, to say that I have to hire salespeople, so I have to right. hire somebody that's more dominant, more social, things like that. But then that tells me how I need to manage them. So back to your question. First off, you need to talk to the people in your organization who are familiar with the position in your company. I see a lot of people that are going outside of their company to get feedback on that role. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I think you should get as much information as you can, but you really have to understand how that role is within your company.
Right.
For example, if we're looking at sales, if you have a Wild West shoot from the hip, just hunt it down, nobody knows what's going on, sales department, and that's how you run your sales department. I'm not saying it's negative or positive, it's just how a lot of guys run their sales department. I heard a salesman say this not long ago. We asked him, you know, he's really good at sales. One of the top salespeople in the world, actually. He's the number one platform salesperson. And we asked him, so what is it you do? Why are you so good at sales? Mm-hmm. And his answer was, I don't know. All I know is the men want to be me and the women want to be with me. That was his response to his sales.
Wow.
If you have a sales team like that, right, that's a very dominant, right, very egotistical, very social.
They you like better get people. Some like sexual harassment kind of insurance or something.
Yeah, you might get some insurance there. But, you know, they don't follow the rules. They don't follow the structure. They're just cut me loose and let me go. If you have that kind of sales department, well, that's one kind of sales department. Another kind of sales department is ones that follow the rules. They follow the sales process, right? They know exactly what their script is. They know exactly how much they're selling a product for. They know everything about the product, right? Top to bottom. Mm-hmm. That's another kind of sales department. Well, if that's the kind of sales department you have and somebody says, oh, you should go hire a maverick salesperson, they're not going to fit into your culture. They're not going to fit into your process and the way you do sales. And then you're going to say, wow, this guy doesn't work here. And vice versa. You hire a high process person, put them into sales. And let's say you have that Wild West sales department. They're not going to fit in. And they're not going to be either. Mm-hmm. So you've really got to understand within your company what that position and that role looks like from a behavioral standpoint. Are you asking them to be social? Are you asking them to follow a process? Are you asking them to work on a team, or are you asking them to work individually? So those are the kinds of things you got to look at.
Which I'm a maverick, by the way. What are you?
I forgot.
Sean is not a maverick. Yeah. I remember right.
I don't know.
Captain remember
the mastermind we're a part of, Sean. Remember, I saw your pattern, and I'm like, wow, he's like the only one in the room like this. Like, there's not very many like you.
So. I'm unique. Yeah. I'm one of a kind. I keep telling Joni that every day, and she doesn't. She just doesn't listen.
Well, I just come in, tear everything apart.
But no. Thank you for that. That was a great answer. So I wouldn't tell you if you told a bad answer, but I thought that was a great Thank you. That answered my question.
No, and actually, I thought we did a pretty good job of creating those descriptions in our office, and so we lead. We have a VA company where we service VA remote team members to other franchises, RPM franchises. And I mean, I think that that's kind of been a game changer for us, is using the predictive index, because we can get really, really close, to whatever job they're doing. They, they're motivated. They've stuck with us for long periods of time, so we haven't had a whole lot of turnover.
And then to your second point, like having that onboarding call with the client and mm-hmm. understanding, how their sales department or their how they structure that role to make sure this person might be great in our company, but might not be great in theirs.
Right.
But So it's and using that as a two-part tool. Yeah.
The cool thing about PI is also on the back end of it is when you hired that person, you knew what you were getting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, all guys will call me and they'll be like, man, this person didn't follow like they didn't fill the CRM route right. And they made mistakes here and there and all this kind of stuff. and I'll pull the PI pad, their profile, and it'll be Joni like a maverick. And I'm like, well, you knew this when you hired them. They're like, well, yeah, but I thought I could manage it out of
them. I could change him, right? Yeah.
I could change
them. Doesn't work that way.
I really like them. And I'm like, yeah, but you knew what you were hiring. So that is the cool thing about PI, is that if you're hiring that, you guys have experienced it. It's 95% accurate.
Oh, yeah.
So when you hire somebody, that's what you're hiring. Mm-hmm. And so at least you can say, okay, am I willing to manage this person like they want to be managed, right? Like with Joni. We're not going to put Joni in an office sitting in front of a computer all day long, not talking to anybody. Like, that's not going to work. And then when she's out, you know, talking to everybody and giving everybody her ideas, and we're sitting there thinking, what is she doing? She's supposed to be doing her job. Well, we knew she was going to do that. Right. So
that's been our struggle, to
I'm
be honest.
The idea machine.
Because I'm like, I want her to be on work, and she's out there, and she's at that time when she's out there talking and
doing. That's what I thrive. I love doing it.
She's happiest then. And I'm totally opposite, because I'm not like that at all. So I want her to be in the office like me, working, and but yet that doesn't make her happy. So yeah, I agree 100%.
So or when you tell her to do something a certain way, and she improves it, right?
Just doesn't do it at all. What are you
talking about? No, I'm telling you, it's scary accurate.
one of the other questions we wanted to ask you was, because I think you've had a lot of experience, you've coached a lot of companies. How do you create a winning team and design a winning team, mm-hmm. and the chemistry and all that?
So this may be a different answer than what you're going to expect out of me.
Go for it.
I'm gonna go this way. What I find a lot of companies, and this is more the consulting side of things, and like you said, I work with on-site or on-site, I'm with about two companies a week that I'm working with and digging into this stuff with, and they're talking about their teams. And a lot of companies, what they're doing is they're starting off by hiring the team and then hiring the manager to manage this team. Okay. And that rarely works. I don't know how many times I would turn over an entire store staff because I would change out the manager. When you go to build a team, you've got to start with the person who's going to manage that team, mm-hmm. and get their input and get them involved in who they're managing. Just handing somebody a team and saying, here, take this and run with it. You see it in sports all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They bring in a coach, and the coach has got to deal with the draft picks from the mm-hmm. previous year. And like, you know, I live outside of Chicago, and Chicago just went through this a couple of years ago with their quarterback. The previous coach drafted the quarterback, and the new coach got him, and it looks like a complete bust. And it's more complicated than that, but it was a complete bust. They ended up trading the guy. It was our second round. I mean, it was, you know, second pick overall. It was just like terrible, right? Because we handed the coach a team and said, here, take this team and run with it. You know, I grew up in Chicago. Oh, I'm Chicago. In the 90s, we had the Bulls, you know, and even putting Michael Jordan on the Bulls team in 84, they stunk. Like, they didn't do anything. They didn't win a championship. When did they finally win a championship? In 90, when the entire team had turned over, because they brought in a new coach, brought in a new GM, and completely rebuilt the entire team, right? You hear it all the time. We're rebuilding. So when you're building a team out, you really need to look at bringing in that integrator, that manager, and putting them into that process of them putting together the team. I know how many times I had a manager look at me and say, when somebody wasn't doing their job, well, you're the one that hired him. I didn't hire him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get it. There's that extreme accountability and mm-hmm. accountability. At the end of the day, I couldn't get managers really involved in caring about their teams unless they were the one that helped build the team. And I've run into that several times lately where people were trying to decide, who are they going to hire first? Am I going to hire a salesman first? Am I going to hire a COO first? Am I going to hire, you know, whatever, finance person first? And always my advice to them is start off by hiring that COO, that integrator that can help you build the team from mm-hmm. there. Gary and I, as we look at companies and we start companies or we build our own companies, first thing we look at is the integrator. Is that role, if we're buying a company, is that role filled? Or are we going to fill the role? And if we're starting a company, it's always my very first hire to building that team. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think, and this is the other piece. I mean, PI makes hiring very objective. We're looking at saying, is this person a match for the job or aren't they? Mm-hmm. Do they hit the benchmark for cognitive or not. Mm-hmm. But I think culture is something that a lot of us overlook. And I tell you, I overlooked it for a very, very long time. I just thought, okay, this is just a bunch of like voodoo magic, whatever. I don't care what the culture of the store is. And until one day I worked in restaurants a long time. So I analyzed restaurants, you know, different, I think, people who have worked in them. One day they built a brand new Chick-fil-A on the way to Midway Airport in Chicago. I drive by it every time I go to the airport. Across the street is a Popeye's Chicken. I personally like, and my brother will kill me for this, but I personally like Popeye's chicken sandwich better than I like Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich.
Okay.
Right? I think it's a better sandwich. It's a bigger sandwich. It's crispier. I think it's better. But I'm looking at Chick-fil-A, the brand with the line wrapped around the building, and I'm looking at Popeye's with one car in the driveway. And the question is, why? I feel like the other one's got better food than the other one. You know, but why? And it really boils down to the culture of the one compared to the culture of the other.
Yeah.
The culture of the one is we're friendly to customers. We fix the order when it's wrong right away. We don't ask any questions, right? We move the lines quickly, right? You get in line at Chick-fil-A. They just opened a brand new one down the street from my house. The line was like literally out to the road, wrapped around the building three times. And I think I was in line for like 15 minutes, right? There's a completely different culture and a feel when you go to a Chick-fil-A. I go to the Popeyes and I feel like nobody cares because the culture is nobody cares. And I realized that in my own businesses, that the businesses and the stores that I had, because each one operated independently, you know, I tried to diagnose what was the difference. They all served the exact same food, had the exact same oven, everything was the same. And it started with the manager, like we've been talking about, and the culture that they had. Did they have a culture of accountability, of taking care of customers, right? Of treating people the right way? Or was it a culture of just, hey, whatever? And you know what that went all the way down to? That bad culture were the restaurants that I had the most stealing coming out of. Where I had guys that were blatantly pulling a $100 bill out of the drawer. You know, because the culture was one of, well, we really don't care. When you're building a team, you've got to define that culture. And you've got to make sure that the manager who's going to be helping with that culture, right, is on board with that as well.
Yeah. Did you find that the culture was dictated by the manager or the integrator, or was it? Mm-hmm. Could it be, like, say you had 8 stores, right? Did you have the same culture in all 8 stores, or was it different depending on the manager and the store itself?
So looking back on it, first off, because I thought culture was just like not that big of a deal, I didn't really push culture hard, like personally myself.
Yeah.
And at least the first probably 7 or 8 years. I didn't, not like I should have, looking back on it from a leadership standpoint. Because when we talk about building that company structure, the CEO is really the one responsible for the culture. Yeah. Like Gary Harper in our company, he's responsible for the culture.
Right.
Now, he sees a problem with it, he comes to me and we start talking, what are we going to do about it? He sees the culture. But the culture had a lot to do with, my restaurants were in 3 different states. And it was always amazing to me how I could literally be in the Chicago market and I had a store about 35 minutes south of Chicago. And I go into that store and it was just the whole community was just different. There was a different culture in that community and in that store. So it was definitely different from store to store to a degree. There was a little bit of a difference. But that difference really was from the general manager who was running that day-to-day operations of that store. Now, again, I didn't do a good job of pushing the culture that I wanted onto the general managers. So they kind of each were pushing their own culture. And I didn't think they were even doing it on purpose. Yeah. It was just what came out of them.
Yeah.
And so some stores were different.
Extreme accountability, other ones weren't.
Yeah, I could see the different mix like within like actual cultures or the communities they're in. But you look at Chick-fil-A, they have the same culture across the whole United States. And Yeah, and it's amazing they do, because they have those lines wrapped around, and like we're in Houston where it's either raining or it's extremely hot, right? And they have all those people out there, you know, taking the orders and standing in the rain with their ponchos and, you know, and yet they're still all happy. Yep. And like, it's amazing. And you go to like, Popeyes or something like that, it's like, they don't even want to take your order. Like I'm inconveniencing them, you know? And so,
And that's why I say it starts at the top. Like I could have impacted it and had it the way I wanted and I didn't. So I left it up to the manager, not even on purpose, it got handed off to them. And so each of them developed their own culture. And so then I ended up having restaurants that ran extremely well and I had one store that had the highest sales per person of anywhere in the country for Papa John's. Wow. And they had another store that was terrible. Yeah. And I went into it, I realized years into it, because I was just so busy in the beginning, just getting stores open, and it's not an excuse. And I wasn't focused on it, that it was like, wow, it boiled down to what they were doing in the restaurant. And then I had to get that turned around for all of them. In the last couple of years, much better. So yeah, it starts at the top. Mm-hmm. And if you don't set the culture and you don't hold people accountable to the expectation of this is how we do things around here.
Right.
How things are done. That's what culture is. This is how things are done around here.
Yeah.
This is how we treat customers. This is how we interact with each other. Right. This is how we respond to people. Mm-hmm. This is that whole everything about the culture. So I think when you're building a team, I've really lately been on that. Like, what's the management look like? We got to start with that. And then is that culture piece right to building that team? Because when somebody doesn't fit the culture, doesn't fit your team, when they don't fit the team, that culture piece usually will come out first.
Yes.
You'll notice right away they're not a cultural fit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you can have different cultures within your company. And the fact is that the finance department and the sales department have a different culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say even
other cultures there.
Yeah, even within our own organization, we're in two different states, and from the top down, we have a certain culture and message, and it's delivered. But there's still a uniqueness between our Albuquerque and our Houston. There's still a different mix, and now that we used to try to like almost beat it into them or keep them lean, like, and keep the bulk of the staff here. But then when we started to shift gears and be like, you know what, let them, yes, we still have the way we treat our clients, the way we present ourselves to the public, but they have their own little unique characteristics to them. And that makes them buy in more, especially because they're not here day to day. So they can't see, they feel like they're always missing out. But now that they have their own little unity and their own
team out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. When you have multiple, I had 8 locations that spanned, 3 different states. And so, yeah, it was always a challenge of them all feeling like they were one big team, but then they each wanted their own cultures within their stores.
Right.
Kind of different.
Any tips for maybe motivating your teams? I know, a lot of companies struggle with motivating their teams, and especially during this time, any tips there?
I found, you've got to dig a little bit and find out what your employees are motivated by. Mm-hmm. It's not all one thing. A lot of times it's different stuff. So for example, and it's really not even always about the money. Now, to say that, I'll put the caveat that you've got to pay competitive wages, right? Like there's always that thing. But I found that when I dug deeper and had conversations with them and asking them really what they were motivated by, that was huge, instead of me guessing what they were motivated by. So for example, with us, what I found was that my managers were all in their 30s, kids at home. What they were motivated by was spending more time with their families. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't so much about more money, though all of us want more money. It was about their schedule. Mm. So we took all of our managers to 4 days a week. Mm. And when we did that, all of a sudden, my turnover rate dropped like a rock. That was the motivating factor, was the fact that they got 3-day weekends to spend with their kids because they didn't see them that often. I was just with a client this past week that, sat down, talked to all of his team, and they all agreed they went to a 9-to-3 work schedule. They all finished at 3:00. Hmm. And he's like, I actually am experiencing more productivity out of them, whereas before they would take a longer lunch, now they're working harder in that short period of time. Mm. Now that's all the scheduling, but I think motivating your team, I don't think we do a good job of sitting down and getting feedback from them. Mm. I think as business owners,
right.
we stop and say, well, I think they would like this.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting down and saying, hey, what is it you're really wanting out of this job? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw a study was done out this last year, actually, that they went around and asked active candidates, active applicants, people who are actively looking for another job, what is it they were looking for in another job? And it was growth opportunities. is what they were actually looking for. People were out looking for another job. Whereas, so I think you got to look and say, how can we invest in our employees, both by what are they really looking for in this job? Mm-hmm. You know, what really is that deep down driving thing besides money? And then also looking and saying, you know, how are we investing in them? Are we giving them opportunities to grow within our company? Are we giving them opportunities to grow personally? I think that's a lot of motivation that we're missing right now.
Yeah.
In motivating them.
Sounds good.
Sorry, that was kind of a broad.
Yeah, no, this stuff is just fascinating. Yeah. I think we can go through like 3 or 4 episodes on just the predictive index,
we're gonna
right?
We're going to have to
and
be back.
Hiring yeah. and you know, all yeah. of that. So, you know, we appreciate the time that you spent, you know, explaining all this and giving our listeners insight on what it is and, you know, how it can benefit their businesses. So,
yeah. So, I mean, we're going to probably have you back and go into deeper and go. We didn't even get to like interviewing and all that. And yeah. I know you have so much experience and knowledge, especially on the consulting side, but how can, you know, if people like what they heard, how can they get involved with you? How can they find out more about, you know, Sharper Business and then also the Predictive Index?
Yeah. So I think probably the best thing is go to, sharperprocess.com. Remember our website name. So go the sharperprocess.com. It's going to have a lot of information on there.
Okay.
And from there, you can get in touch with us through the website. I'll say our Facebook page too, Sharper Business Solutions over there. Predictive Index, if you're interested in it, they can feel free to reach out directly to me. You don't have to call Predictive Index direct. You actually can reach out to us. And then if you reach out to us directly, we're able to work with you on it. If you reach out to them directly, they'll just assign you to a random person. And so you can reach out to me, Austin@sharperprocess.com. And be happy to, you know, if somebody's watching this and wants to say, hey, I'd like to take one, we can give out a few free assessments as well for cool. them to kind of test it out and see how it works and all that as well.
Cool. Nice.
We'll put that in the show notes. And yeah, if you're looking and if you're not utilizing this, I think in your business and you are growing and having staff and new positions, or, you know, you don't have that thriving team that Austin talked about, I think you need to reach out and talk to them and definitely, I know Gary and Austin very well and they run a great organization. So we'll put that in the show notes and awesome. So they can reach out to you personally and get going with you guys. But any last notes?
No, thank you again, Austin, for sharing some wisdom there. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Cog, cog, cogging.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.